Warren Buffett's shareholder letters are legendary in the investment world, studied religiously by everyone from college students to Wall Street veterans. When Bill Gates was asked which book changed his life, he didn't hesitate. Everything by Warren Buffett. Even celebrities like Will Smith and LeBron James have cited Buffett's wisdom as instrumental to their financial decisions. What makes these annual letters so extraordinary is their ability to distill complex financial concepts into homespun wisdom, delivered with Midwestern charm and self-deprecating humor. Unlike most corporate communications, Buffett's letters have become cultural artifacts, quoted in boardrooms and business schools alike. This collection of 240 gems offers a front-row seat to the thinking of a man whose investment philosophy has created more wealth than almost anyone in history. The stock market, in Buffett's view, isn't the rational mechanism many economists claim. Instead, it swings wildly between two contagious emotions, fear and greed. These emotional epidemics create unpredictable aberrations that can send prices soaring far above or plummeting well below intrinsic values. This emotional volatility often manifests in market bubbles and crashes, where rational valuation methods temporarily lose their relevance. Rather than attempting to time these emotional cycles, a fool's errand according to Buffett, he famously advises, "Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy only when others are fearful." This contrarian approach has served him remarkably well across multiple market cycles. When the 2008 financial crisis sent markets into freefall, Buffett was buying American stocks heavily, even writing a New York Times op-ed titled, "Buy American, I Am." He made significant investments in Goldman Sachs and General Electric, securing favorable terms while providing crucial stability to the market. While others panicked, he recognized value. Similarly, during the late 1990s dot-com bubble, Berkshire largely avoided tech stocks despite widespread criticism that Buffett was out of touch. This discipline saved Berkshire billions when the bubble burst in 2000. Buffett reminds us that mathematics eventually prevails over emotion. No stock can indefinitely outperform its underlying business fundamentals. The euphoria of bull markets may temporarily obscure this reality, but cannot repeal it. He points to numerous historical examples, from the 1929 crash to the 2000 tech bubble, where market prices eventually converge with business value. When the tide goes out, as Buffett colorfully puts it, you discover who's been swimming naked. His risk management approach is equally straightforward and has evolved from painful early experiences. When investments lack appeal, Buffett defaults to U.S. Treasuries, never compromising safety for slightly higher yields. This stance was particularly evident during the high-yield bond craze of the 1980s, which he entirely avoided. As he puts it, "I won't trade even a night's sleep for the chance of extra profits." This philosophy extends to Berkshire's massive cash reserves, often exceeding $100 billion, which critics sometimes view as overly conservative. But Buffett sees cash not as an unproductive asset, but as valuable ammunition for when genuine opportunities arise, as demonstrated by his ability to act decisively during the 2008 crisis. What makes Buffett's market philosophy so powerful is its psychological insight and practical application. While others get caught in the emotional whirlwind of market swings, his emotional equilibrium allows him to act when others cannot. He maintains this discipline through detailed record-keeping of past decisions and their outcomes, regular review of investment principles, and a deliberate distance from daily market noise. Have you ever found yourself frozen with indecision during market volatility? Buffett's approach suggests the problem isn't lack of information, it's allowing emotions to override judgment. He advocates maintaining a personal temperature gauge to monitor your emotional reactions to market movements and adjust accordingly. Despite his occasional criticisms of government inefficiency, Buffett maintains unwavering faith in America's economic future. He observes that politicians from both parties often follow Charlie Brown's advice: no problem is so big that it can't be run away from. He wryly notes that while government excels at printing money and creating promises, it cannot print gold or create oil. Yet Buffett's patriotism runs deep. He frequently reminds shareholders that throughout his lifetime, despite constant predictions of doom, Americans now live an astonishing 6 times better than when he was born. This perspective helps explain his famous 2008 declaration that he was buying American stocks for my personal account during the financial crisis, a vote of confidence when many had lost faith. Buffett's optimism isn't blind cheerleading, but based on historical perspective. He's witnessed America weather the Great Depression, World War II, the Cold War, stagflation, and numerous recessions. Through it all, the American economic engine has continued to advance. As he puts it, in the 20th century, the United States endured 2 world wars and other traumatic and expensive military conflicts. The Depression, a dozen or so recessions and financial panics, oil shocks, a flu epidemic, and the resignation of a disgraced president. Yet the Dow rose from 66 to 11,497. This long-term view informs his investment approach. While others obsessed over quarterly results, Buffett thinks in decades. He famously stated that his favorite holding period is forever. This patience allows Berkshire to weather short-term volatility that might force other investors to sell at precisely the wrong moment. Buffett's gratitude toward America is palpable. He notes that writing large checks to the IRS doesn't bother him, as he and Berkshire have prospered in America as we would have nowhere else. This sentiment reflects his understanding that business success depends not just on individual talent, but on functioning institutions, rule of law, and stable markets, all products of the American system. Have you ever noticed how the daily news cycle creates a sense of perpetual crisis? Buffett's century-spanning perspective reminds us that progress doesn't follow a straight line, but the trajectory remains upward. Berkshire's annual shareholder meeting has evolved from a small gathering into what Buffett affectionately calls Woodstock for capitalists, drawing up to 40,000 attendees to Omaha each May. This phenomenon reveals Buffett's genius for creating community around business ownership, transforming dry corporate governance into a celebration of shared values. The meeting's format reflects Buffett's transparency and accessibility. From 9:30 a.m. until at least 3:30 p.m., he and Charlie Munger answer unscreened questions from shareholders. No topic is off limits. When most CEOs limit exposure to carefully scripted quarterly calls, Buffett and Munger spend hours engaging directly with owners. As one attendee remarked, "Where else can you ask the world's greatest investor anything you want?" The adjacent exhibition hall showcases Berkshire subsidiaries' products, from See's Candies to Brooks Running Shoes, turning abstract ownership into tangible experiences. Buffett encourages shareholders to shop enthusiastically, quipping that anyone who says money can't buy happiness simply hasn't learned where to shop. This integration of commerce and community creates a festival atmosphere unlike any other corporate meeting. Buffett's self-deprecating humor permeates the event. After losing his voice before one meeting, he joked that Charlie was crushed when I showed up the next morning with my speech restored. When the question system became chaotic, he implemented a more orderly approach, noting that sprinting ability should not be the determinant of who gets to pose questions. At age 78, I've concluded that speed of foot is a ridiculously overrated talent. His annual baseball pitching appearances at Omaha Royals games showcases his talent for humorous trash talking. He claimed to have thrown a strike that the scoreboard reported at 8 miles per hour, explaining he had shook off the catcher's call for my fastball and instead delivered my changeup. In subsequent years, he introduced fictional pitches like his flutterball and claimed Rosenblatt Stadium sits on a unique geological structure that occasionally emits short gravitational waves, causing even the most smoothly delivered pitch to sink violently. What makes these antics significant isn't just their entertainment value, they humanize capitalism. In an era when many view business leaders with suspicion, Buffett presents an alternative model, transparent, accessible, and genuinely having fun. The meeting's popularity demonstrates how business can build community when leaders prioritize relationships over hierarchy and transparency over image management. Warren Buffett's management approach stands in stark contrast to typical corporate leadership. His philosophy is disarmingly simple. We are here to make money with you, not off you. This shareholder-first orientation permeates everything from Berkshire's compensation structure to its acquisition strategy. Despite overseeing a conglomerate with hundreds of thousands of employees, Berkshire's headquarters operates with remarkable leanness. The five-person team at World Headquarters handles what would require dozens at most companies. Buffett humorously noted their characteristically rash move of expanding headquarters by a mere 252 square feet, 17%, demonstrating his allergy to corporate bloat. This minimalist approach allows them to focus on managing the business rather than managing each other, a distinction lost on many organizations. Perhaps most revealing is Buffett's approach to subsidiary management, which he describes as hire well, manage little. After acquiring companies with excellent businesses run by exceptional managers, he largely leaves them alone. This hands-off approach contradicts conventional wisdom about post-merger integration, but produces remarkable results. Berkshire CEOs often remain in place for decades, many working well past traditional retirement age, because, as Buffett notes, they love what they do. Volunteers, not mercenaries. His minimalist interference is captured in a football analogy. When quarterback George Mira threw a left-handed touchdown while being tackled, his coach calmly declared, "Now that's what I call coaching." Buffett and Munger view themselves as partners who enjoy our work as managing partners to a sinful degree, subscribing to Ronald Reagan's creed that hard work never killed anyone, but I figure, why take the chance? Even Buffett's one extravagance, the corporate jet, becomes an opportunity for self-deprecating humor. He and Munger named it the indefensible, acknowledging the contradiction with their frugal philosophy. Buffett quipped that were he to die, Berkshire's earnings would increase by $1 million annually since Charlie would immediately sell our corporate jet, the Indefensible, ignoring my wish that it be buried with me. This leadership style, focused on trust rather than control, simplicity rather than complexity, and humor rather than pomposity, creates an organizational culture that attracts and retains exceptional talent. It also explains why Buffett and Munger show no signs of slowing down despite their advanced ages, with Buffett famously planning to retire about 5 to 10 years after I die. His commitment extends to keeping at least 99% of his net worth in Berkshire for life, aligning his interests completely with shareholders. Think about the leaders you've worked with. How many embraced simplicity and trust over micromanagement? Buffett's approach suggests that the best leadership often involves getting out of people's way. In an era of corporate doublespeak, Buffett champions radical transparency in business communication. His shareholder letters avoid jargon and euphemisms, instead using plain language to explain both successes and failures. This approach stems from his belief that candor benefits us as managers. The CEO who misleads others in public may eventually mislead himself in private. While maintaining appropriate secrecy about investment ideas, Buffett insists on clear explanations of business operations so shareholders understand what they own. He criticizes managers who hide segment information and celebrated the SEC's eventual mandate for disclosure, comparing it to Al Capone's insight that you can get more with a kind word and a gun than with just a kind word. Buffett's transparency extends to his own mistakes, which he acknowledges with characteristic self-deprecation. After 3 consecutive years of errors in liability estimates, he joked that if Pinocchio's rules applied to him, my nose would now draw crowds. Regarding his U.S. Air preferred stock investment, he humbly admitted, "Your guess is as good as mine as to its ultimate value." Indeed, considering my record with this investment, it's fair to say that your guess may be better than mine. This willingness to admit errors stands in stark contrast to the image-obsessed culture of most corporations. Buffett understands that acknowledging mistakes builds trust and creates learning opportunities. As he puts it, "I would like to tell you that the mistakes I will describe originated with Charlie. But whenever I try to explain things that way, my nose begins to grow." His transparency extends to accounting practices, which he views as an aid to business thinking, never a substitute for it. He repeatedly warns against deceptive metrics like EBITDA and pro forma results, quipping that his golf score is below par on a pro forma basis, since he only counts swings before reaching the green. He particularly despises accounting gimmicks, noting that it's been far safer to steal large sums with a pen than small sums with a gun. This commitment to honest communication creates a virtuous cycle. Shareholders trust management. Management feels accountable to shareholders, and both benefit from clear understanding of the business. It also attracts like-minded investors who value substance over spin. Have you noticed how refreshing it is when someone speaks plainly about complex matters? Buffett's approach demonstrates that clarity isn't just ethically superior, it's also more effective. By stripping away corporate jargon and accounting tricks, he focuses attention on what truly matters, the underlying economics of the business. Buffett approaches acquisitions with disciplined patience, viewing each potential purchase through the lens of long-term ownership rather than quick profits. His philosophy focuses on finding outstanding businesses at sensible prices, not mediocre businesses at bargain prices, noting that making silk purses out of silk is the best we can do. With sow's ears, we fail. This approach differs dramatically from typical corporate M&A strategies, which often prioritize size, synergies, or short-term earnings accretion. Buffett warns that a too high purchase price for the stock of an excellent company can undo the effects of a subsequent decade of favorable business developments. This insight explains why Berkshire sometimes sits on substantial cash reserves for years, waiting for the right opportunity at the right price. Buffett approaches business acquisition with the same attitude as finding a spouse. It pays to be active, interested, and open-minded, but it does not pay to be in a hurry. This patience has allowed Berkshire to acquire companies during market downturns when others lack capital or confidence. As he memorably advised during the 2008 financial crisis, "When it's raining gold, reach for a bucket, not a thimble." Unlike private equity firms or strategic buyers who plan eventual exits, Berkshire has no exit strategy. We buy to keep. This permanence attracts sellers who care about their company's future and employees' welfare. It also allows Berkshire to make decisions with truly long-term horizons, free from pressure to show quick results. Buffett's investment approach mirrors this patience. He practices lethargy, bordering on sloth, as an investment cornerstone, rarely trading major holdings. This low turnover strategy minimizes transaction costs and tax liabilities while allowing compounding to work its magic. As he puts it, "Time is the friend of the wonderful business, the enemy of the mediocre." His focus remains squarely on purchases rather than potential sales, sometimes finding himself with more cash than good ideas. He acknowledges Berkshire's size limits future returns. If you believe otherwise, you should consider a career in sales but avoid one in mathematics, bearing in mind that there are really only three kinds of people in the world: those who can count and those who can't. This patient capital allocation approach requires emotional discipline few possess. While others chase the latest trends, Buffett maintains what he calls emotional stability. This steadiness allows him to act decisively when opportunities arise, but resist action when conditions aren't favorable. Consider how this philosophy might apply to your own financial decisions. Are you constantly trading based on market movements or patiently building positions in quality businesses? Buffett's approach suggests that investment success comes not from activity, but from quality decisions followed by extended inactivity. Buffett maintains healthy skepticism toward financial intermediaries, observing that, in the securities business, whatever can be sold will be sold. This wariness stems from his recognition that Wall Street's interests often conflict with investors, despite rhetoric about client service. He criticizes the financial industry's tendency to analyze through the rearview mirror and promote complex instruments that generate fees regardless of client outcomes. Zero-coupon bonds, for instance, let the street make deals at prices no longer limited by actual earning power. Similarly, he warns against trusting financial projections and models, advising investors to beware of geeks bearing formulas, despite their impressive appearance. Hedge fund managers receive particular criticism for structures that ensure they walked away rich, with their limited partners losing back their earlier gains after poor performance. Buffett famously won a 10-year bet against hedge funds, demonstrating that their high fees typically erode any advantage they might provide. His skepticism extends to consultants, comparing asking them about potential acquisitions to asking your interior decorator whether you need a $50,000 rug. He notes that only in the sales presentations of investment banks do earnings move forever upward, highlighting how incentives shape analysis. The banking industry's lemming-like zeal in lending receives similar scrutiny. Buffett laments how debt became something to be refinanced rather than repaid, and how taxpayers ultimately bear the cost of financial institutions' risky investments. He observes that in financial innovations, what the wise do in the beginning, fools do in the end. This skepticism toward financial intermediaries informs Berkshire's approach to capital allocation. Rather than relying on investment bankers to identify acquisition targets or consultants to evaluate them, Buffett and Munger make decisions based on their own analysis. This independence allows them to act when others won't and abstain when others are competing frantically. Buffett's warnings about financial helpers remain particularly relevant today as financial products grow increasingly complex. His advice suggests that simplicity in investments, financial structures, and analysis often outperforms complexity. The proliferation of high-fee investment products, complex derivatives, and elaborate financial engineering hasn't generally improved outcomes for investors. Next time a financial professional presents a complex solution with high fees, consider Buffett's observation that their interests may not align with yours. As he puts it, the financial industry isn't selling what clients need, but what clients can be talked into buying. Beyond investment wisdom, Buffett distills business fundamentals into memorable aphorisms that apply across industries and eras. He emphasizes the importance of being in businesses where tailwinds prevail rather than headwinds, recognizing that industry dynamics often matter more than management skill. As he puts it, when a management with a reputation for brilliance tackles a business with a reputation for bad economics, it is the reputation of the business that remains intact. His adaptation of Shakespeare's Polonius, "Neither a short-term borrower nor a long-term lender be," captures his conservative approach to financial leverage. Unlike many businesses that use debt to juice returns, Berkshire maintains substantial liquidity, allowing it to act when others cannot. This approach proved particularly valuable during financial crises when Berkshire provided capital to companies like Goldman Sachs and Bank of America on extremely favorable terms. Buffett warns that major additional investment in a terrible industry usually is about as rewarding as struggling in quicksand. This insight explains his avoidance of certain sectors despite their prominence in the economy. The airline industry, for instance, receives particular skepticism, with Buffett quoting Richard Branson's quip about how to become a millionaire. There's really nothing to it. Start as a billionaire and then buy an airline. For businesses Berkshire owns, product quality remains paramount. At See's candy shops, quality is considered sacred, with Buffett willingly paying for the finest ingredients regardless of price fluctuations. This commitment to quality creates customer loyalty that allows premium pricing, what Buffett calls an economic moat protecting the business from competition. He succinctly distinguishes between price and value. Price is what you give, value is what you get. A distinction lost on many businesses that compete primarily on price. This philosophy extends to Berkshire's acquisition approach, where they seek businesses worth owning completely, stating, if a business is attractive enough to buy once, it may well pay to repeat the process. Buffett distrusts seller projections, comparing them to a man selling a limping horse that walks fine sometimes. This healthy skepticism toward optimistic forecasts has helped Berkshire avoid overpaying for acquisitions, a common pitfall for corporate buyers. The insurance business receives particular attention in Buffett's writings, reflecting its importance to Berkshire's operations. He approaches it with cautious humor, noting the industry's asymmetrical surprises. You are lucky if you get one pleasant surprise for every 10 that go the other way. He likens optimistic insurers to someone in a knife fight who exclaims, "You never touched me," only to hear, "Just wait until you try to shake your head." These business principles, delivered with characteristic wit, offer timeless guidance applicable far beyond Berkshire-specific operations. They remind us that business fundamentals, understanding value, maintaining quality, avoiding bad industries, and being realistic about projections matter more than fleeting trends or complex strategies.